This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. Songwriter Ellie Greenwich died Wednesday in New York at the age of 68. Greenwich co-wrote many of the girl group hits of the 1960s, including these. All the songs we've just heard were co-written by Ellie Greenwich and Jeff Barry, who were briefly married. With the exception of Chapel of Love, which Greenwich and Barry co-produced, all the records we heard were produced by Phil Spector, the first real genius of pop production. Ellie Greenwich didn't write exclusively for the girl groups. Her songs include Leader of the Pack, recorded by the Shangri-Las, I Wanna Love Him So Bad by the Jelly Beans, River Deep, Mountain High, done by Ike and Tina Turner, Maybe I Know by Leslie Gore, I Can Hear Music, recorded by the Beach Boys, and Doo-Wah Diddy, performed by Manfred Mann. Greenwich was one of the few women to break into pop songwriting in the early 60s. She grew up in Levittown on Long Island, and she got her start when she was hired as a staff writer by the songwriting team of Lieber & Stoller. She worked out of the Brill Building in Manhattan, the headquarters of many of the top 40 songwriters and producers in the 60s. When the British Invasion took over the charts and groups started performing their own original material, a lot of songwriters ended up out of work. Greenwich went on to write jingles and also co-produced many of Neil Diamond's early hits. Terry interviewed Ellie Greenwich in 1986, at a time her career was enjoying a brief resurgence, with a Broadway review of her songs which introduced her to listeners who never stopped loving her songs but never knew who wrote them. Terry asked about the song Chapel of Love, one of the first hits that Greenwich co-wrote and co-produced.
That song had originally been cut by the Ronettes. Phil Spector had cut it with the Ronettes, but never put it out. Why? Do not ask me. And we always believed in that song. We knew it had to be a spring release or a summer release because of the nature of, you know, Chapel getting married, June weddings, the whole thing. And what happened was when they did not put that, when Phil Spector didn't put that record out, Jeff and I said, we have to do something with it. And just at that time, a gentleman named Joe Jones came up from New Orleans with a whole slew of people. Amongst them was three girls, which we eventually named the Dixie Cups. And here were all these singers just hanging out at the office, you know, Lieber and Stoller's office. And we said, girls, come here a minute. And we went to the piano, and we played it for them, and they sang. So it's very, I mean, anybody could sing Chapel of Love, you know? And we said, we have to go in and make this record. And it's funny, in my whole career of being in the studio producing, there were only two songs that I literally walked out of a studio and said, either these records are going to be zippity-doo, nothing, go nowhere, or number one records. That was Chapel of Love and Leader of the Pack.
Did you have a special rapport with the singers and the girl groups being a woman yourself?
I think initially, it's funny, back then, because I was so involved in the productions and working on the background vocals and what have you, I was not just, well, here's my song, see ya. I got involved in everything. And it wasn't that accepted back then, a female being in that end of the business. A songwriter, a lyricist, automatic acceptance. A background singer, automatic acceptance. A writer, because Carole King and I were really the only female writers then that I know of that actually sat down at the piano and sang the song and really got involved. And that wasn't, because it was, there were so few of us that, you know, it was sort of like looked on and you know, walked away from a little bit. But what happened was eventually the girl said, gee, we have someone we can really relate to, somebody we can talk to. We have headaches today. We want to tell somebody who's going to understand better than Ellie. So at first it was like, well, who does she think she is giving us orders here or telling us what to do? But on the other end, if you just were very open with them, they saw they could be your friend. And then it became an asset to be a woman dealing with the girl groups.
How much did you, when you were starting, and did the groups that you wrote for really know about love and sex?
We knew very little. We really were, as we said, that, you know, the good girls. And we just knew what we read, and we knew what we fantasized about. And our experiences really were very limited. But you could, if you don't write about what you've experienced, you certainly can write about fantasy, so it comes out the same way.
What were some of the problems that you had breaking in and getting accepted, being a woman? Because as you just pointed out, there really weren't many women songwriters in the early 60s.
Well, I think I was very fortunate in that most of the early things I got involved in became hits. So what choice did so many of these people have when I said, well, hey, you know, I have a little track record here. This was a hit, and this is doing well on the charts, and I'm doing, you know, and it was almost like, well, we don't love, you know, like the musicians would say, we don't love a woman telling us to go like this on your guitar, but I said, look at me as the thing. Forget, you know, and I think because of my success, it made it a little easier. Plus, I did a lot of co-producing with Jeff, so I had a little male protector on one side, you know? So I think the combination of the success and having Jeff there, they really didn't have much of a choice, did they?
What was your technique for writing songs together?
Very often we would get ideas separately and then come to one another with our ideas. We would generally have title first and write what we call our hook line or our chorus. Sometimes I played piano. Sometimes Jeff would play piano. Once again, both of us doing both, sometimes we would actually both sit down at the piano and like almost kill each other because I'm playing one thing and he's playing another. But we did complement each other, and we found a way for some reason that the songs just happened with us. It was the most natural. With whomever I've written with since, Jeff and I still had the most natural writing partnership that I've ever experienced.
You got married to each other, and, you know, after all, you'd written songs like Chapel of Love, you were writing all these, Today I Met the Boy I'm Going to Marry, all these great love and wedding songs, Not Too Young to Get Married. Did you think that you were going to have a marriage that was everything that the song said marriage was going to be?
Well, I have to, like, flee in on something. I grew up in Levittown, Long Island, on the corner of Starlight and Springtime Lane. You tell me if I thought my marriage was... Yes, I did. I really believed in the little house with the white picket fence and together forevermore, and absolutely believed that I was really a dreamer. And I think that still can happen. Unfortunately, it didn't happen for us, and I think that was partly the business fault. But yes, I was very much a hopeful romantic.
Songwriter Ellie Greenwich speaking with Terry Gross. Here's another hit she co-wrote. That's the Ronettes. More with Ellie Greenwich after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview recorded in 1986 with songwriter Ellie Greenwich, who died on Wednesday.
One of the big hit songs that you wrote was Leader of the Pack, which you co-wrote. And it was performed by the Shangri-Las, who I always think of as being the tramps of the girl groups, because they had such a tough
You think
image.
They were trampier than the Ronettes? I mean, Terry, please.
Oh. How did you get to work with those Shangri-Las?
Well, there was a guy that I knew named George Morton, whom we, because he was also one that was a little eccentric and like would never show up on time, so we ended up calling him Shadow Morton. So George calls me. He has this tape and a bunch of girls he wants me to hear. Brought the tape to the office, and this thing went on. He did this male narration. It was 7 minutes long. I said, no, we can't do that. But there was something very interesting in this song. Different. I said, who is this singing? This thing back there? You know, I said, wow, it's a very different sound. Saw a picture of them and said, see, that there's where, what an added thing. What an interesting-looking little group here. And met with them, and the record came out. Big hit. It's now time for a follow-up. So Shadow said, we got to write something together. And at that time, when you made money, you bought yourself boots or motorcycles. I mean, that was really what it was all about. So everybody, every male, Jeff, Shadow, the engineer, the arranger, they all had motorcycles, and they were always riding motorcycles. I said, why don't we do something with motorcycles? Okay, we can call it. There's always a leader. The head of the group. I said, no, it doesn't sound good. And we just threw titles around. Leader of the Pack sounded important. And Shadow Morton also had a habit of writing little soap operas. His songs all became these little mini soap operas, right? So with his influence, we melodically did certain things, whatever. And he had to have this, had to be a sick song. And Jeff had written Tell Laura I Love Her. So he was used to being involved with the sick element. This was new for me. I said, hey, as long as it's not too disgusting and I can deal with it. So I think we had everything from the sound effects to motorcycles to boy loving, you know, the girl loving the boy that's forbidden. I mean, all of these, death, my God. I mean, it was like everything was in there. And once again, like I said, and there's the way Mary sounded, the way the whole group looked. I thought the picture was a perfect picture and the record was just the perfect kind of a thing to be a top record.
Why don't we hear it? Okay.
Okay.
This is Leader of the Pack, co-written by my guest Ellie Greenwich and performed by the Shangri-Las.
Is she really going out with him?
Well, there she is. Let's ask her.
Betty, is that Jimmy's ring you're wearing?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, it must be great riding with him. Mm-hmm. Is he picking you up after school today?
Mm-mm.
By the way, where'd you meet him?
Yes, we see.
That's when I fell for the leader. of the pack. My folks were always putting him down.
Down, down.
They said he came from the wrong side of town.
What do you mean when you say that he came from the wrong side of town?
They told me he was bad. I knew he was dead. That's why I fell for the leader of the pack.
Small, he kissed me goodbye. The tears were beginning to show. As he drove away on that rainy night, I begged him to go slow. And whether he heard, I'll never know.
Look out! I felt so helpless, what could I do?
That really still sounds great.
It's fun, isn't it?
It really is. How did you decide to get in the screeching wheels and the motorcycle revving up, all the sound effects? Why did you decide
to
put it in?
We had to.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how could you have a song about a motorcycle without a motorcycle sound in it? I mean, that was half the record. The gimmick. That was the gimmick part of the record.
Rock music was the music of rebellion, and it really separated children from their parents. Because parents were listening to Steve and Edie Gourmet, and the kids were listening to your records. But you were from the suburbs. You were from Levittown.
Mm-hmm.
Did you feel like you had to act a little tougher than you really were in
no.
order to fit in, or anything like that?
No, I was not a rebel, and I'll never be. No, any good. No. I didn't feel I had to prove anything or be that different or whatever. I just, first of all, once again, most of the songs that I had the hits with were very romantic, nice songs. I mean, you know, my most off-color song was Hanky Panky, you know, and when people say, and yet my baby does the Hanky Panky, she dances, she this, she kisses me, whatever you want it to mean. I left the door wide open. I never said it, you know?
Did your parents like your songs?
Funny. My parents, may they rest in peace, were very supportive of what I wanted to do. Didn't quite understand what it was. When my mom used to tell her friends, like, well, you know, my daughter's a songwriter, they would say, well, gee, we're really sorry. So she changed the term to, well, my daughter's a musical productions. Well, that's just wonderful. Then it made more sense to them, you know. And what happened was, because I started having success so early, they were very, of course, fearful, like, what was she going to get into in this? They've heard such stories about the music business, the industry so crazy. But, I mean, I am level-headed, you know, and they did see that. And they were very happy for my success because I was very happy with it. I mean, I was doing my first love. I was earning a living at it, you know. I was married. I mean, I had the whole all bases covered at that time in my career, so they were very happy for me, really, very proud.
Songwriter Ellie Greenwich speaking with Terry Gross in 1986. Greenwich died Wednesday in New York. She was 68.